Hello, and welcome to the Love Mia Vita podcast. I'm Jerry DiPiano, CEO of FemPharma. Thank you for joining me as we discuss all things women's health and wellness. Please note that this information is simply that. It's information to help you to think through your decisions. Please consult your medical practitioner to discuss your personal situation. Thank you. Well, hello, Dr. Juliana Hauser, and here we are again for round number two, or three, or four, or five, however many rounds there have been. You and I keep doing these wonderful Love Mia Vita podcasts, and today I'm especially excited, and I guess excitement is actually the right word, because we're going to talk about pleasure, and it's something that we all ought to be having, but perhaps we're not having enough of it, or perhaps we don't have any pleasure in our life. Mm-hmm. So we're focusing on pleasure. And Dr. Juliana Hauser, who is a frequent guest, and for those of you that haven't tuned in before, Juliana, share a little bit about your background with our audience, because you do have a very distinguished background.
Oh, thank you. I am a twice licensed mental health therapist with individual and couples and families. I have an expertise within sexuality and menopause, and I have a particular interest in changing the conversation about our sexual culture.
Well, we have lots of great podcasts with Dr. Juliana. We have some great content on our website, on the FemPharma website, with talking about sex and pleasure and agency. But today we're really focused on pleasure. And what is it? Because when we think about pleasure, do we think that we derive it from external sources? Should it come from within? So what is your definition of pleasure?
Yeah, and that's great. You know, it's interesting when I'm not sure I've been asked to define pleasure. And I think it's such a good point, and it's a starting point that I think is often overlooked, because we assume we're talking about the same thing, and then we get into discussions, or we get into techniques or debates, and are we even saying the same thing? So my view of pleasure is something that feels internally like a yum or a yes to you. So your instinct, your body, your thoughts, your feelings are all supportive of a yes. That to me is what pleasure is. And the opposite of that is not pleasurable. And that's when your body, your emotions, your feelings are telling you no on something. And I think one of the most important things where you have to start is you have to know. To be a pleasure-filled person, to be somebody who invites pleasure into your life, you have to know how your body cues you for your yeses and your noes, so that you can read it correctly and not override things.
So when we think about pleasure, sometimes we think of the antonym for pleasure is pain. Mm-hmm. But that's personally, that's not the way I view it. So it's not that it's pain or pleasure. It really is the absence of pleasure, which is a level of discomfort, and it could be physical discomfort, or it can be emotional discomfort. So you often use the yucks and yums in our conversations, what we like, what we really don't like. And I guess that when you have more yums than you do yucks, maybe that's pleasure.
Yes, you're right. And I do use that quite a bit, because of even the example that you gave, which is for some people, the thought like pain is a pleasurable idea for them. And so I wouldn't even want to yuck somebody's yum with that wording, which is, again, another good point of how we need to be using the same kinds of languages. And, you know, some people, the yuck and yum is novel and interesting, and others, you know, it doesn't resonate. So I say yes and no, but I'm speaking the same thing. When I use that terminology, and I think your point of oftentimes we define things by what it's not, which is indicative of how little we infuse pleasure into our lives. And we don't even infuse it into our language and the way we speak. And I think you've heard me say this before, that when I got on the pleasure kick, when I realized how important it was to have pleasure in our life, I started saying to people, Does this bring you pleasure? And they looked at me like I was nuts for a second. Because usually it's like, oh, was it fun? Were you happy? Was it a great time? Those are the words that we often use and associate with the goal of things. And so when I started saying, did it bring you pleasure? They're like, well, yes, my lady. Or, they're like, what, Julie? Oh, Lord, Julianne, like, here you go again. Until there were people who were like, oh, I do get it. And so I will have people now say, it brought me pleasure, proactively, or they will ask me. And I'm still, even though I pursue that and want people to ask me those things, it is interesting when I'm asked it, it is still something that feels different to hear. And I'm grateful for the reminder to bring pleasure into my life and having that be more the pursuit than focusing so much on happiness and so much on things feeling good all the time. And for me, from a mental health perspective, I think pleasure is much more of a healthy pursuit than happiness is, because we can, although being unhappy can dull the experience of pleasure, we have a lot more access and more control in the pursuit and experience of pleasure than we do in happiness.
So, do you think that pleasure is the amplification of happiness, or does it not necessarily have to coincide with happiness? So, can you have pleasure without being happy?
I think it changes the continuum. And again, another good question, Jerry. I think that they are related, they're cousins, but I don't think they're the same thing. And I think you can have a relationship, what brings me pleasure at a certain scale absolutely makes me happy. Those two things come, go together. But there are times that I can have a burst of pleasure and not be overall feeling in a happy place too. And for me, if I'm feeling down, or if my mental health isn't supporting an abundance of happiness and pleasure, I look for the micro pleasures in life to help me boost myself into that place, and you get a dopamine hit, or help myself be reminded of a bigger picture. And I think that's another place that pleasure has in life, that pleasure can help bring perspective when maybe the world feels like it is upside down. Perhaps looking at the most beautiful bouquet of flowers that brings me so much pleasure can boost me for that moment. Is it going to bring me happiness? I don't know. But I'll say the difference of this, like whenever I get on the camera with you and I see, like, you always just look so beautiful and put together, and I love what scarf you're going to wear. I get a burst of pleasure. Like, I get time with Jerry and just look how lovely. And I know we're going to have, I have an anticipatory pleasure because I know we're going to have a great time in the conversation. And it also makes me happy to have that. And it makes me feel happy to have stacked the knowing that I'm going to be feeling pleasure in interacting with you. And so to me, that's how some of the relationship can coexist.
So I feel the same way. And Juliana and I started this professional relationship just as professional relationship. And we just got along and we never met in person until recently. And along the way, we became friends. And so it is always fun. It is always a pleasure to see Juliana, even though we are miles apart. Thank you for saying those things.
Oh,
Feeling
truly.
is mutual, friend.
Thank you.
So she's a friend. She's also a medical and scientific advisory board member for the company. So we do have a professional relationship, and thankfully we also developed a nice little friendship here. So, yeah, I mean, I think that the way you describe it is interesting, because oftentimes when we talk about pleasure, people do equate pleasure and maybe sex. So if you're not having sex, you're not experiencing pleasure, and I'm not so sure that's true either, based upon some of what you described as the little pleasures, right? I mean,
Yes.
certainly sex can be a part of it, and I know you, as a sex therapist and an ex a sex expert, expert sex expert, you talk a lot about that. But we can spend a little time, and should, because we know All of you listening, you'd love to know about sex, how to spice up your sex life. What are your yucks and yums? We know that resonates with you, so we'll spend a little bit of time on it. But I think we can spend a little bit of time on what happens outside the bedroom, or what happens if you don't have a partner, or maybe you're not in love with your partner. Maybe things are changing for you. How do you still find pleasure?
It's and I'm so appreciative of you bringing up the unpartnered part because there's a lot of issues in the way that we are educated about sex, and one of them is that it's almost always focused within a relationship, and that's not how the vast a lot of people experience their sexual selves. And even if you are partnered, you have to have an individual relationship with who you are as a sexual being first and foremost before you're going to be and while you are going to be having any kind of meaningful and pleasure filled experience sexually. So I want to start make one more point outside of like a sexual content or quote outside of the bedroom, and that's that you really when you if you are sitting here thinking like I just don't have a pleasure filled sex life, the first thing you have to do is look at what your relationship with pleasure is just in general. And so outside of a sexual context or quote outside of the bedroom, you want to look at what is your relationship with pleasure? Are you somebody that denies, denies, denies? Your days are busy, you're stressed out, it's one thing to another, you're in the moment, but you're not in your body in the moment. And then it's vacation, and it's like that's when I'm gonna find pleasure. That's gonna and you wait, you hold off, you deny, and then it's reserved for special times, or you overindulge. And if that's you, and that's a lot of us, then you want to right the ship of that. You want to start, and the best way to do it is start infusing it with micro pleasures. And I gave the example earlier of flowers. It is something that I've done. I make a point to have fresh flowers. Almost every week, I get like on a Sunday and go get a bouquet of flowers. And I really love it when my special flowers are there, like my favorite flowers are there. And it's not just about in having something that makes you feel good for the moment. It's about seeking what, again, what your yeses and nos are. It's about rewarding yourself for seeking that pleasure and teaching yourself the muscle memory of pleasure is okay, pleasure is safe, pleasure is actually a good thing for me and for anyone who's around me. And we are wired to remember the negative very easily for our survival, and we haven't out evolved that wiring in our brains. So we quickly store the negative so that we can survive. We don't need goodness, happiness, and pleasure as a species to survive. I mean, we know we do now, but our evolution hasn't figured that out yet. So we have to work extra hard to store in our brains and neural pathways that says pleasure is good, pleasure is acceptable. So when I do a micro moment, I'll sit there. Even I'm true this before this meeting, I was like, I'm really happy. I'm really excited. It's going to bring me pleasure to have this hour with Jerry. And it's just even just a 10-second thing that I do, or I love that flower. I am excited to be sitting here with my daughter. It's going to bring me so much pleasure, or that brought me so much pleasure. I hugged a sloth 2 weeks ago for a half an hour.
Oh,
It was the
oh.
best thing ever, and I was pleasure filled in the 4 hours it took me to get there. I was just bursting with pleasure when I got to see the sweet little Zoe, and then holding her was incredible. And then the whole 4 hour drive back, I was like, pleasure, pleasure, pleasure. That was pleasurable. And I wanted it wired in my brain. I wanted all these neural pathways that were going to be associated with the fact that I let myself have a day that was just for me. It was ridiculous in a lot of ways to say, why would you do, why would you drive 8 hours in a day for 30 minutes of hugging a sloth? Because all of my programming is that's wrong. Don't take a day off. This is self-indulgent. This is ridiculous. That's 8 hours of driving. What all the negative things that come so easily that I can store like that, so that the next time I deny myself, or the next time, and what I know is when you do that outside of a sexual context, It absolutely infuses inside of one. And
Mm.
again, I'm not going around just like whatever I want and pleasure, pleasure, pleasure. There is a balance to this, but the balance is out of whack to begin with. So you have to make those extra efforts and infuse those things into your life and into your brain. And again, I think it is a very important aspect of our mental health. And I think, it's pretty easy to look around and see the negative and see the lack of pleasure. It is a beautiful thing when pleasure doesn't hide itself from you and you open yourself up to it also. So that's about micro pleasures and just kind of the culture of it. So after you look at your relationship with pleasure and make sure it's more even keeled, that you have daily micro pleasures and you are having a more balanced type of pleasure into your life. And frankly, I'll add, you are somebody that supports other people having pleasure in their life, and you're not a little judgy Betty on things, and you are happy when you hear when people are doing things that make them pleasure filled and are safe and consensual. Then you can do that inside, and you need to do this inside of your sexual life. Even if you are somebody who thinks that things are okay, and in your sexual life, there's always room to widen things in your sexual life. And if you are somebody that isn't experiencing pleasure, there's always hope to change that. And it begins with yourself first. And I'll stop there.
You know, I'm thinking about as you're sharing what happened, recently with, the hugging the sloth and so forth. It does. Those are micro pleasures, but it actually trains our body to rem and it creates that memory of what it felt like to really experience that. In my own case, so I have dogs. Everybody that knows me knows I like am an animal lover. So I have these three dogs, and I have this little rescue named Rubius Hagrid. And although I love all my dogs, and I probably could have like a dozen or more dogs, like a whole kennel full. Little Rubius Hagrid, because he was abused, needs so much from us, from me, and he is clearly my boy. But when I hug him and when he now cuddles with me, that is where I get so much pleasure from that, because and it's the reciprocity of the whole thing, that I know I'm doing something good for him because he was so hurt and he was so abused, but he does more for me than I do for him. So it's just that whole, it's, I get the, it's the oxytocin that, starts churning up in my body, and that bonding, and it feels so good. So that is one of my micro pleasures that isn't attached to sex, but it is attached to giving and loving and caring and having some creature that really responds to that in a way that perhaps wasn't part of his life. Music is another example. So I absolutely love music, of various types. We've talked about this. I'm into, the heavy metal, rock and roll, but I can also listen to Andrea Bocelli for hours, and others like him, who, sing beautifully, and they sing ballads and they sing songs of love. And yeah, that's so it just it's my little indulgence. When nobody is in the office, I'll tune up my radio, or I'll tune up one of my stereo systems in the office, and I'll just play whatever I feel like could bring me a little bit of joy.
It's so, I love hearing that. And you look different when you started talking about that. And I really do feel like it's contagious. When I said that I hug the sloth, you smiled immediately. And I felt the same way when you started talking about your dog and dogs and music. And it's important too, to relationships, to have relationships that have that reciprocity and support in it. And again, that's inside and outside of sexual connection. And I'll move us to more overtly into our sexual lives. And knowing we hear this a lot, and I'm grateful that the conversation has changed so much in the past 5 years of really taking the taboo out of talking about self-pleasure or masturbation, because there just needs it should not be shame-filled, but there's still some of it, but it's less than it was. But it's the starting point of really knowing what our body likes. And I think the best way to start doing that, if you're not someone that's comfortable with a self-pleasure practice, is learning what touches you like, just even on your arm, and just saying like, what is my natural reaction to this? And then you can move it to other areas of your bodies and move to your genitals also, and play around with that, and play around with that question of like, is this a yes or a no? Is this a yuck or a yum for me? And it doesn't have to be this long drawn out thing. It doesn't have to be all at once. It doesn't even have to be one time. But it can be that the starting of asking yourself those questions and waiting for a response from yourself is really pivotal to then translate that muscle to having that experience happen with somebody else. When I'm working with couples, and their sexual life is one of our main topics that we're talking about, I will say outright, is your sexual life pleasure filled? And then sometimes I'll have individual sessions, and sometimes I'll ask it between the two of them, and I'll say, what are you the best at sexually? What is your partner the best at? And do you feel like you or your partner are skilled? Like, are you having sex that's bringing you pleasure? And if you're not, what is it? Is it happening? Is there something physically happening? Is there something mentally? Is it a relationship factor? Is it not knowing it, or is it just not being good at it? And I think that's a question that is hard for people to ask. Often people will have an answer, but even harder to say that loud, especially if they're in a good relationship. They don't want to hurt their partner's feelings, but like, actually, like, he's not really good at oral sex and hasn't been for 20 years. And after I pretended it was good for the first few times, I just did not know how to change that. Or things have changed, or what worked before doesn't work now. And then that lack of feeling pleasure translates to often to having a lack of desire. And so we know that if you're not pleasure filled or having pleasure in your sexual activity, whether it's by yourself or with somebody else, why would you want to do it? And really, the answer is you don't. And you either push yourself through it, deal with it, or avoid it. And none of that is going to promote pleasure inside of outside of your life too. And I have, in my many years of practicing, and this is going to feel bold, and I guarantee someone's going to hear this who does not have a lot of desire and is not and doesn't care. It's saying like, I don't need it. I've decided that. When I meet somebody who would describe their desire as being really shut down and have made the decision they no longer want to have sexual activity, there will be a part in their life that also feels deadened outside of their sexual life too. They may say that they're very happy and content, but it's just, I haven't had it happen the other way. Maybe there's somebody out there that's the case. Now, that's different than choosing not to want to be sexually active or to be sexually connected. That's a very different scenario. But someone who just says, yeah, I'm dead inside, no interest. There's no desire, there's no interest, there's no pleasure. It will have presented itself somewhere else in their life too. And there's always ways to change that. And pleasure is often learning pleasure in a different format, often is the first line of fire for it.
Our expectations change as we mature and grow. So, what we found pleasurable, what we found exciting about, like, since we're talking about sex, from your 20s and in your 30s, in your 20s, maybe you weren't in a partnered relationship, maybe there was nobody in your life. Then you get into your 30s, you find your partner, maybe you decide that you want to be parents, and parenthood changes the way that our bodies respond to sex and pleasure and the simple act of having a child, right, changes a woman's body. So perhaps, her ple where she derived pleasure in the past has changed because her body has changed, or maybe her brain has changed because now she's got this responsibility. And let's face it, Women are the ones that are largely going to be the caretakers of these infants. Obviously, we're speaking to mostly women on these podcasts. And then you enter perimenopause. So sex and pleasure evolve over time. And sometimes it gets better because some of the constraints are removed. Your children are grown. Maybe they don't need you as much. Maybe that's liberating. Now you have the freedom to do whatever you want to do, whenever you want to do it. But to your point, sometimes things get in the way. And you said this, that it doesn't matter to you or that you're not interested in it. There might be another part of your life that feels dead or shut off. And we know that depending upon medications that you may be taking, so you may have certain physical limitations. You may be medicated. Perhaps you are suffering from mental health challenges aside from female sexual interest and arousal disorder, but there's another issue in the background that is impacting you. And I guess what do you do in that instance? What if there's a person that comes in and says, "Well, I'm dead in another part of my life." Maybe they're open about feeling dead in another part of their life.
I mean, the first line is just to have so much empathy and compassion for that happening. I think the scenario that you laid out is very common, and it's a common formula that I see in people's lives. And again, like my viewpoint is not that you have to be having sexual activity, that you have to be engaging it in order to have a good life or a pleasure-filled life. But for those who they want something different, or they're hearing other people say that life can feel different at this age or in this scenario, but how? Then you hit all the points. You need to look at mental health, physical health. You need to look at relationship health, all those things. Where you really want to start is there any kind of like what is bringing you spark and vibrancy into your life? Which is very related to pleasure also. And if something is coming with ease and bringing you vibrancy, so not just like it's good, but if there's something that gets you excited, something that changes your purpose, something that brings something else alive in you, you want to do that. You want to focus on that, particularly outside of a sexual context, and train your body to open up and to waken up to that again. And again, that's not like putting just this wash over the harder parts of life or ignoring it, but it is trying to balance out. It's as if you're trying to learn how to lift weights, and only one side of it has this huge, huge, huge weight. You're never going to be equaled out, and it's going to be really hard to lift it. So you need to be able to lift up in other areas where it's ease filled, the more positive aspects of it, and it's pretty magical to see that happen, to have somebody go from like, in life to like, yeah, this is life is good, and there is a reason, there is a purpose, there is fun in this, and I can change how I show up for that. I think can be pretty profound. And then doing that in your sexual life as well, there is quite a case for adding novelty to a sexual life and as a way to spice things up. But also I think there's a science behind it as well as a psychology behind it. And novelty makes a big difference. And novelty has a wide range too. What is novel for me may be novel, very different than what's novel for you, which is great. And first you have to start finding that out. Like what feels different? You want something to me that is in that beautiful sweet spot of it's a nudge, but not a shove. So it's something that's like, oh, that's a little different. I'll try that. And you've heard me say too, like, I think you should do a no thank you bite. If it's consensual and safe, then see what that feels like. Get very curious about what that is. And have a web chart for you to choose from so that you know, because if I was to sit here right now, and I think about this stuff a lot, and I practice what I preach. I'm not sure I could tell you three things that would feel novel to me right now, but I know there's three things out there that would be. So if it doesn't come to me easily, I need to do the research, and I need to take the responsibility for that. And it's something that I go back to a lot with people I work with, which is pleasure is your birthright, but it's also your responsibility. And so you want to be in charge of how you are experiencing pleasure and bringing it into your life. Curiosity is one of the things that you can intrinsically bring to you. And when you're partnered, you want it to be something that is it works within that relationship. And that can get tricky because, as I just said, what's novel for me may not be novel for you, and vice versa. So if we're in a relationship, we've got to figure out how to negotiate our yeses and nos if they don't coincide as we're seeking pleasure. And even just saying that little part of it, I like to joke with people that my clients and saying, like, isn't it a miracle anyone's having pleasure-filled sex? I mean, it is amazing. There's so much that impedes it, and yet it can happen. I don't know if you've read the art. There's an article that just came out. I think it was the New York Times. They were saying that Gen X, they did an informal study of I think the Gen X women are having the best sex of any generation. And some of that, I could have more points that I would add to why I think that's the case. I experienced it myself, like things that felt good to me physically are different. And even some of like, and one part of pleasure is orgasm. Sometimes even that, my access to that is different now that I've had a hysterectomy. But I don't take that as in it has to be that way. And I'm shifting my relationship with what pleasure feels like. I'm also educating myself even more, and I'm working also to make sure that I'm putting pleasure outside of a sexual life too, so that while this is shifting and changing, I'm getting to know it, that my body still remembers how to respond and invite pleasure in.
So when we think about sex and pleasure, and we think about it in the context of a partnered relationship, we think about it in the context of an unpartnered relationship. But let's so talking about a partnered relationship, even if you've been with your partner, let's say for lots of years, like I have with my husband, many years, don't even want to admit how many years, but it does shift and change. And I like the way that you frame this as a negotiation, because when we met, we were children, and I don't literally mean that, but we were a lot younger than we are now. But if for somebody in their 20s and 30s, very different. Now, you're in your whatever. You've been together for a long time. It feels different. Maybe it looks different. Maybe you're both different. And so trying something new that feels good to both of you can be important. If you're in a new relationship, same thing. More negotiation than ever, right?
Absolutely. Yes. And for some people, new sexual partners is the novelty itself. And for others, it's actually the impediment to pleasure because of the negotiation, the safety isn't already in place. And, I believe that safety is the number one aphrodisiac, and the number one inhibitor of like lack of safety, emotional safety, communication safety, to pleasure too. So it can be hard to establish that with a one night stand or somebody that you've just met, but not in a long-term relationship. But you have novelty with the new person, but not necessarily novelty with your long-term relationship. I mean, it's there is often grass is greener effect here, and there are positive and negatives to both of those. And it's really just again about how you have access to it. You add any of the societal stuff of pleasure is bad, or it's bad for women to seek pleasure, and the world sucks right now, and it's even more hard to get to that place. But what I like to bring to that, whether you're partnered or not, is if you are grounded in the belief that pleasure is good for you, and that there's a purpose. A scientific purpose and a psychological purpose, a soul purpose to having pleasure inside and outside of the bedroom, then that's the starting ground of invitation to me making it what your own. And you said this earlier about I believe in agency. I believe in being able to have autonomy and decide things for yourself. And when you have that, when you have an agency in your pleasure and in your relationship with somebody you've just met or long term, it allows there to be, instead of, and for those who are just listening, instead of just like holding on, like this is my way, this is me, or like a scarcity mindset or a fear, it allows you to have this openness, which then allows you to have creativity, which then can bring in what pleasure is for you. The continuum may change. It's in all different times in our lives, we have like this much room or access to pleasure and this, and it's an accordion. I do think there is a misnomer that when we get older, our it just automatically goes down. I disagree with that. I know plenty of people who their sexual life changes. Like you said, like the details are different, but their experience is actually vastly better and much more honed to the truth of who they are. And it changes from performative sexual pleasure to actual authentic sexual pleasure. And I wish that we could learn that much earlier in life, that when our bodies have a bit more freedom to pleasure on its own, that we had the psychology behind it, matching it. But some things just come with wisdom and the times that we're in. I have found that to be an enormous sexual awakening, especially for women. And when you have that new access to sexual agency, I think it is a restart to sexual pleasure too, even if you have different physical access to pleasure.
So I loved what you said. I loved most of everything you said, but I especially like the idea of it is your responsibility. Pleasure is your responsibility. You can't expect someone else to give you pleasure, to teach you how to find pleasure. So thinking about that for a moment, in the case of individuals that are not partnered, you are still entitled to experience pleasure and to find that both in the context of sex. And there are a variety of ways that one can find that singularly. And then there's also what happens externally, because as you pointed out, that trains our brains to enjoy the process. And it is the, and the, I guess that was the other piece that I really liked. It is a process of, determining what makes sense and what doesn't make sense, what feels good and what doesn't. But first, it comes with you. You have to know yourself. You have to know your body. You have to understand. And so maybe we can distill this down to a couple of three points that our listeners and viewers can take away from the conversation on pleasure. And it's not about, you don't necessarily have to receive a card or a present. And I know we have holidays that celebrate love and pleasure. And I think we need to move away from that. It's having love with pleasure. Maybe it's the penultimate, but maybe not. Maybe
True.
you can have pleasure without love, right?
Yeah. Oh, yes. So my point number one then would be, I want everyone to make an effort to go through all of their senses and do a curiosity like scavenger hunt of their senses. So if you whatever senses you have access to, and to whatever extent within each senses that you have, go through and be able to say five things that are a yes or a yum to you, and five things that are a yuck or a no to you. So go through every single one of those senses and do it inside of sexual context and outside, and have it ready for you. And if you're partnered, encourage your partner to do the same. So my second point is, be a pleasure communicator. And be someone who proactively shares with others what brings you pleasure and seeks that information from other people in your life. And then a little plug, like my addendum to number two is, if you have children in your life or you're exposed to people younger than you, use those words also, and do it for people older than you too, because there's a lot of ageism in pleasure. And there's a lot of belief that you either know it and it's how it always is when you're getting older, or part of aging is that you don't get to have so much pleasure and so much say, and you should just be happy for what you get. And I disagree with that wholeheartedly. I could talk about that for an hour. And then third, I would say you have to add fun to the experience of pleasure seeking. And I think that they're really tied to one another. Curiosity and fun, I think, are the trio, the two things that add to the trio of experiencing pleasure, and more than happiness. I think fun is what you need to infuse into to your experiences. And some people can answer what's fun to them easier than it is to answer what's pleasurable, and find the combination and do a mindful connection with those, and make that extra 10-second effort to say, this brought me pleasure, and I deserve pleasure, and I'm going to take responsibility for my pleasure inside of outside of sexual behavior.
So you just heard it from the expert, Dr. Juliana Hauser. It's always wonderful to have you on the Love Mia Vita podcast. And that's what we are. Love, Mia Vita, my life. It's about taking responsibility for your life. And certainly we know that it's your responsibility to make yourself feel good, enjoy your pleasure, find your pleasure, and love Mia Vita. Juliana, thank you so much. Take
Thank you.
care.
Oh, sweet, sweet, sweet. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on the Love Mia Vita podcast. Love Mia Vita means love my life, and that is a mantra we should all live by. Please like and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, and check out our website at fempharma.com. Remember to live well and love Mia Vita.